The Israel Report with Rolene Marks.
Rolene Marks, thank you for standing in for Anthony Reich. How are you?
It is always my pleasure to start off my morning speaking to you and, of course, the wonderful listeners. And I was listening with great interest to what you were saying before we crossed over. Isn't it amazing how quickly the world has forgotten about the plight of the women in Afghanistan and just how extraordinary the focus on another area of the world is, just saying.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Let's get, have there been updates on the Abu Akleh investigation?
Well, let's talk about that, because it seems that a disproportionate amount of focus, and I use that word intentionally, is being given to this. And yes, it is very, very important that we get to the truth and that there is an investigation. But we have had quite a bit of news over the last couple of days. So over the weekend, it was announced that Israel will not be doing an investigation headed by the military police, but we will be still engaging, which is still ongoing, in an operational investigation. Naturally, and I still see it in the media this morning, the international media has pounced on the fact, on a few words. Israel will not be continuing an investigation, and this is patently untrue. Israel has said we are committed to getting to the truth. Yesterday, the head of the military advocate general said that, you know, a lot happens in the fog of war, but Israel is committed to this. We will be engaged in an ongoing investigation. We know since the moments that followed the fatal shooting of Al Jazeera journalist Shirin Abu Akleh that Israel not only offered a joint investigation with the Palestinians, but said they are committed to doing that. However, the decision has been taken that this will be an operational investigation for simple reasons. First of all, it is not thought that there are any criminal motives behind the shooting of Abu Akleh. And also, the IDF don't see the point, or the necessity rather, of putting soldiers through criminal type questioning, because it's because of the circumstances surrounding that. So it's not to say Israel is discontinuing investigations, it's just a different kind of investigation. And as you and I spoke about a couple of weeks ago when this all went down, we don't think that either side did this intentionally. It is, of course, a horrible, horrible, horrible risk that any war correspondent takes, is to pay with their lives sometimes in conflict. And there have been thousands of journalists that have been killed. The other big incident we had this weekend was a letter from 57 members of the US Congress demanding that the FBI and the State Department, which effectively is the CIA, get involved in investigations. Now, this could be because it is suspected that Abu Akleh has or had both Palestinian and American citizenship. That is not confirmed. But as you can imagine, Israel's ambassador to the United States responded with quite a heavy hitting letter.
It's fascinating, because when you have the death of Americans in Israel, they had to work very, very hard. Death because of terrorism. People had to work very, very hard to get that recognized by the Americans. So it would be fascinating if this was something that would become a focus of an investigation. Maybe it would be good. Maybe it would be a positive in this particular incident.
Well, what I find truly extraordinary is that the death of Abu Akleh managed to convene the UN Security Council. I don't recall the UN Security Council ever meeting when Daniel Pearl was intentionally kidnapped and murdered by Al-Qaeda operatives in Pakistan. Daniel Pearl was the Wall Street Journal journalist. We can't forget those horrific scenes of him saying, "I am a Jew, my mother is a Jew, my father is a Jew, I am a Jew," before he was beheaded. We also have American Israeli journalist Stephen Sotloff, who was studying at the IDC, and when he was beheaded by ISIS. I'm just wondering where the United Nations Security Council, as well as the demands for the FBI and the CIA to get involved in that. And of course, the reflexive blaming of one party by the world media. You know, this is what astounds me. We still don't know who is responsible for this shooting. The Palestinians still refuse to hand over the fatal bullet for ballistics testing. They still refuse to cooperate. Yesterday, they opened a docket at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, demanding an investigation into Israel, quote unquote. But here we are, Israel being reflexively blamed, Israel ourselves saying, you know, it could have been us. We just don't know until we have all the evidence.
It surely is the easiest thing in the world. Once you've got the bullet. If you've got the bullet, you know where that bullet came from, or where it didn't come from, surely.
Well, we know that the Palestinian chief coroner said that he can't draw a conclusion. And what I do find interesting is that the Palestinian chief coroner is beheld to the Palestinian Authority. And if he comes out with such a powerful statement like that, what else could he not be talking about? But I don't know if it is epic laziness or agenda pushing on behalf of the global media, but these reports that Israel killed a journalist. We have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on Instagram saying that American funding of the Israeli military is what killed Abu Akleh. We have this absolute rush to judgment. But what I find highly suspicious, and I'm sure many of our listeners do as well, and it begs the belief that the media hasn't picked up on this, is if you've got nothing to hide, hand over the bullet.
That's exactly right. That's what I really don't understand. Either way, this is a story that will be ongoing. EU parliamentary president addresses Knesset.
Well, she's in the country. Roberta Metsola addressed the Knesset yesterday. And amongst the things she said that, you know, anti-Semitism was contrary to European values, and that they vow to combat Jew hatred, and says that, you know, the EU will always support a two-state solution. She says, it pains me to say that today we are seeing anti-Semitism on the rise. We know that this is a warning sign for humanity. It matters to all of us. I will not be ambiguous. To be anti-Semitic is to be anti-European. Every day we still see witness attacks on Jews, on synagogues. The European Parliament is committed to breaking the cycle, to combating anti-Semitism, and the ties of our people are deep. And let me be clear, Europe will always back Israel's right to exist. We support a two-state solution. What is quite amazing, how does she manage to unite both Ahmed Tibi of the Joint List and far-right religious Zionist lawmaker Itamar Ben-Gavir in shouting at her and heckling her, much to our embarrassment. That's not how we want to treat our guests. But I have some questions. I'm sure you do too, for Roberta Metsola. If you're so dedicated to combating anti-Semitism, we need to start with some fundamentals, and that is how you frame the narrative around Israel. We were just talking about this very thing.
So and why were the Arab parties shouting at her?
Well, they don't like her. She supports a two-state solution. She focused on the issue of anti-Semitism. And she also spoke about the Abraham Accords. She said that, you know, the Abraham Accords, the normalization agreements, say that, or are evidence that peace is possible. She says the Abraham Accords may well have seemed inconceivable only a short while ago, but they prove that history does not always have to be repeated, that the cycle can indeed be broken. And this is what set off Ahmed Tibi, because he said she did not address the occupation, and that her speech was a green light for further crimes and violations.
Oh my goodness.
And of course she set off Itamar Ben-Gavir by speaking about a two-state solution. So for those who are keeping score and pointing at Israel and saying Israel is an apartheid state, this is democracy Nazi, however badly behaved.
Yeah, I was just
going to
say, you can be quite democratic and also be a mensch. I don't know, somebody's speaking in your, a visitor speaking at Knesset. I don't think it's particularly polite not to, and especially when they're not saying anything that is totally outrageous.
Exactly. You know, the behavior in Knesset is sometimes, you know, both the bane and both the brilliant, because here you have democracy in action. You have everybody represented. You have a whole host of different opinions and viewpoints, something that you don't see in other countries, including in democracies. But can we do it in a polite fashion, guys? Just saying.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad thing. Tell us about these protests at Ben Gurion University. What is going on there?
Well, this I also find quite fascinating. You know, as we spoke about last week, it was Nakba Day. Now, Nakba Day is what the Palestinians refer to as the day marking the declaration of the State of Israel. It coincides with the Gregorian calendar date, and they see the creation of the State of Israel as a catastrophe, which is what Nakba means. And of course, there are all kinds of protests both here in Israel and around the world, and of course not mentioned are the 850,000 Jews that were expelled from Arab countries. You know, that was pretty much a Nakba to those communities. But last week we had protests at Tel Aviv University, you know, pro-Palestinian students waving their flags. That protest did get a bit violent. Now yesterday at Ben Gurion University in the Negev, that also plays host to a whole lot of different and divergent opinions. You know, the Ben Gurion University of the Negev even has a few academics there that aren't so pro-Israel. However, we are a democracy and we have to make allowances for everybody's opinions. Well, they had protests yesterday. Quite fascinating to see the images. On one side, you had the pro-Palestinian contingent waving their flags, saying things that I don't think any other country would tolerate. You had the police in the middle trying to keep the peace. And then you had the pro-Israel students waving their blue and white, and all seemed to be quite peaceful. And I found it fascinating because, again, you know, we hear these accusations around the world, and particularly in South Africa, calling Israel an apartheid state. But here you have at an Israeli university, predominantly Jewish, where the faculty has diverse opinions, here you have students being allowed to say what they want, some of them quite disrespectfully, and it is allowed to take place. If we had to turn back the clock into South Africa, it beggars the question, would this have been allowed to take place on Wits campus or UCT or any other university campus?
Yeah, it's just fascinating. It is interesting, though, that you are starting to see for the first time, I think maybe for the first time, maybe not, these types of protests happening within Israel's borders. Is this a trend that people are concerned about? Is it a trend that you see developing further? What is the thought on the ground?
Well, that is a great question. And one of the issues being drilled at the moment, you know, we have the month-long Chariots of Fire RDF drill, which is the biggest drill in the history of the state. It involves all units of the RDF. It includes also government departments and various ministries, and one of the things that is being drilled quite extensively is to preempt the kind of internal disruptions, the likes of which we saw during the 11-day war last year around about this time. You know, we spoke a year ago saying that Israel is prepared for the rockets, for the projectiles that come from the Gaza Strip, but we weren't so well prepared for the internal strife. And we know that Hamas, various other terror entities are trying to incite and trying to drum up these internal clashes between the Arab-Israeli population and the Jewish population. And we have seen a lot of emphasis and a lot of effort over the last year between leaders of the various communities trying to quell this. Over the last 2 months with the wave of terror, some of the perpetrators coming from the Bedouin village in Be'er Sheva, a great concern to us. So we are trying to drill now, preemptively recognizing and being able to stop that kind of internal violence. And I think this is a way of not clamping down on students who are pro-Palestinians' rights to express themselves. I think, you know, you can also glean a lot of intelligence from these kind of protests, but giving them the space to say what they want to say, and maybe also creating the space other countries take note of how to engage in some kind of meaningful dialogue where we hear their concerns and address their concerns. Cut back to the Knesset. And this year we've seen significant improvements in the amount of budget allocated to improving the situation for the Arab-Israeli community and other minority communities.
And that is unfortunately all we have time for. Rolene Marks, thank you as always with the Israel Report. Rolene will be joining us tomorrow morning at 7:45, standing in for Anthony Reich. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.